We've gotten as far as writing down supersymmetric theories in various dimensions. In these dimensions, there are supersymmetric theories which have no scalars, so they're kind of the fundamental theories from which other theories are built. And the number of supercharges for 16. And so we were interested in studying twists of these theories. So the twists we were interested in studying were not like the ones Witten studied, so they're not going to be invariant under any action of the spin group. They'll only be invariant under some smaller group, which will be some SU, in this case, SU2, SU3, SU5. In three dimensions, with two superchargers, there's no supercharger of square zero, so we can't twist. In four dimensions, there's an SU2 invariant supercharge, holomorphic twist. In six dimensions, there's similarly SU3 and SU5. So last time we proved the following result. If X is a manifold with SU2 holonomy, then the twist of n equals 1 gauge theory on M is holomorphic BF theory. Where the fields are some connection as a 0-1 connection and a 2-0 form, and the action is integral B wedge FA. Okay. So what I'd like to do today is to generalize this to describe what happens when you do the corresponding twists in 6 and 10 dimensions. Before we do that, it's a typical physicist thing. Somebody chose those letters to indicate those symbols, and then they call that. So it doesn't really mean anything. So the statement is not vacuous, and I hope to get time to show why. Like, from this statement, we can immediately compute the supersymmetric indices of 3D n equals 2 theories, and we'll find the standard formulas. And maybe we'll be able to do that next time. So these statements about the twists are like they lead pretty easily to the calculations that people have already done in different forms. So what happens in 6 dimensions? In 6 dimensions, so suppose on a Clavier threefold, the twist of 1,0 gauge theory is again a version of holomorphic BF theory. So the fields consist of a partial connection, which will define a holomorphic structure on some bundle. But now, if you think about the kind of thing that will integrate against a 0-2 form, that will have to be a 3-1 form. And the action functional is the integral of b y at 0 to part of the curvature as before. But now, there's one more subtlety, is that if you notice, this action functional is, of course, invariant under gauge transformations of A, but it is also invariant under gauge certain gauge transformations of B, and that if I add on a d-bar exact term to B, by the Bianchi identity, I'll get 0. So there's an extra gauge transformation. Generated by a 3-0 form, under which B transforms as B goes to I apply the covariant derivative, like the d-bar operator for A, to this extra gauge symmetry that transforms B, and the action is evidently invariant under that. Okay. So the 10-dimensional case was, this was calculated by Beaulieu, apparently also by Nekrasov, although he never wrote it up. Let's see. So, well, I'll just write it out in words, because unfortunately in this case there's no really nice way to write down the action unless one uses the BV formalism, because in this case fields and ghosts and things like that can all mixed up in some complicated way. Since we haven't really discussed how to do ghosts and antifields, it's not very easy to describe this theory. So I'll just say that it's holomorphic to Simons theory. Simons theory in 5 complex dimensions. So some people will already know what this is, but I hope to explain in more detail what that is later. So let's proof. Give the proof of the 6D version. The reason I want to give the proof is mainly so that if you have a physics background, you're not going to be used to doing calculations in this language, and it's useful to be able to translate, say, this in this twisted theory. This field corresponds to such and such a field of the physical theory. So we'll see explicitly how to match the fields up. So let's remember how we do this in 4 dimensions. We had, in 4 dimensions, we had this action. And we introduced an auxiliary field. B, which was a self-dual 2 form. And we got an equivalent action . Well the reason is you wanted the action of supersymmetry to have no derivatives in it, so that we can cancel the fields in pairs and get rid of a bunch of them.
That's the super version.
Exactly, yes. And we're going to want to do something similar here. So we got the equivalent action was F wedge B plus B wedge B off this integral. So you might ask, why is this action equivalent to the original one? The key point is that allows us to translate between a first order and a second order with this self-tilde 2 form, that the integral of f plus wedge f plus is equal to the integral of f wedge star f plus some constant times the integral of f wedge f. And since this is topological and doesn't really matter for our considerations. We could carry this true, and there would be an extra term, and the theta angle. That's fine. But we'll be able to carry. There'll be similar considerations in higher dimensions. But if you ignore this topological term, f wedge star f and f plus wedge f plus, they're just the same. So, since the equations of motion here say b is f plus, and then this term is f plus wedge f plus, that's why it's f wedge star f. That's why we get the angles action. So what we would like to do in higher dimensions is to produce some subspace of the two forms for which something like this will hold. And once we do that, we can use that as our auxiliary field and then proceed with the calculation. Does this make sense? Okay, so what's the analog of a self-tilde 2 form on, say, a 3-manifold? Well, of course, the hot star operator doesn't take two forms to two forms, so it's not obvious how to construct such a concept. We'll make the following definition. Say, if x is Kähler, we let omega 2 plus side of omega 2 be the subspace where this pairing minus the integral of alpha wedge alpha bar wedge omega to d minus 2, the complex dimension of x is d, where this pairing is positive definite. And similarly, omega 2 minus is the same thing as where it's negative definite. So on this, on omega 2 plus, this pairing is the same as alpha wedge star alpha bar. So integral alpha wedge alpha bar wedge omega to the d minus 2 is equal to minus plus. So we have the same, so it's just like what we found in four dimensions. In four dimensions, I take, if I have a two-form alpha, I can take alpha wedge alpha. That's, alpha wedge alpha is a pairing of indefinite signature, and I can decompose into the eigenvalues. And those are self-dual and anti-self-dual two forms. And on the positive eigenspaces, that's the same as the positive definite pairing alpha wedge star alpha, and on the negative eigenspaces, it's the opposite of the positive definite pairing. So the same happens here. And notice that this is also a topological quantity, because omega is a closed form. So this really only depends on the cohomology class of alpha. So what you find is omega 2 plus of x is, if you do the calculation, is the 2-0 forms plus scalars plus the Kähler form times the 0-0 forms plus the 0-2 forms. Whereas the other part is the orthogonal complement of the Kähler form inside of the 1-1 forms. So now we're in a situation just like in four dimensions, or in two complex dimensions. I can take an auxiliary field living here, and I can rewrite the action as B wedge F with B wedge B, where B lives here. And that will be equivalent up to a topological term to the usual Yang-Mills action. So in say six dimensions, the Yang-Mills action is equivalent to the action integral FA wedge B plus integral B wedge B, where B is self-dual two form in this sense. And say X is at least Kähler. So this is a first order presentation of Yang-Mills theory. This dimension. So what this allows us to do is to do the same trick we did in four dimensions. If we introduce the spinners, now the supersymmetry is written in a way with no derivatives and some fields cancel with each other. So we write n equals, I think we can do blackboard. So the field content of the 1,0 theory in six dimensions in the first order formalism . So as usual, so the bosons will consist of a connection, which is a 1-0 form, a 0-1 form, and then we have this field B, which is some of a 2-0 form, and the Kähler, the something proportional to the Kähler metric in a 0-2 form. Fermions. Well, remember that the following useful fact: when I'm if I take the spinners, which are a representation of SO6, and I view them as a representation of SU3, then I can identify them with the exterior algebra, the even part of the exterior algebra of the 0-1 vectors. So the spinners, which live in S plus, sections of this bundle S plus, can be identified with omega 0-0 plus omega 0-2. They're the omega 0 even part of the Dalbo complex. And for this to work, we need the Calabi-Yau condition. Okay, so is this familiar to everybody? I mean, no? Should I remind people why? Yeah, okay. The reason is, it's something about Clifford algebras. So as if I take 4-6 tensor over R, with C can be written as a sum of C3 plus C3 bar. And these are both, these are the plus minus I eigenspaces of J. And they're isotropic subspaces. So that the pairing on R6 pairs this guy with this guy. So the Clifford algebra on 6 generators, once I complexify, is the algebra generated by raising and lowering operators, where the supercommutator with the supercommutator of these guys is delta ij. So the EIs come from C3, and the FJs come from the complex conjugate. Now, the space of spinners is an irreducible representation of the Clifford algebra. And since once we've chosen this decomposition into plus I and minus I eigenspaces, so we have raising and lowering operators, we get an irreducible representation just built from, you know, some vacuum where the lowering operator is actually zero. So there's an irrep, which is just C adjoin the EIs, where the FJ act by D by EJ. So this irrep, is the exterior algebra of C3. So it's the exterior algebra of the plus I eigenspace of R6. Now, if we were to do this on a manifold, all we would be doing is saying the tangent space of a complex manifold, once we complexify, is 1, 0, and 0, 1 vectors. So that the spinners looks like an exterior algebra on the 1, 0 vectors. And that's what we're using. The Clavier condition came in because the vacuum element is not invariant under the spin group. Because of the central extension. I must say I'm always a bit confused about that point, but there's some kind of twisting by that U1. So I don't think I'll be able to give a good answer for that right now. But I think the answer is, if you compute how U3 is inside of SO6, if you write down the elements for U3 and see how they act, they will not preserve the vacuum element. Because the basis for U3 is not given by, you know, EI times FJ, it's given by EI times FJ plus some constants. Okay, so this argument tells us that all the Clifford module can be given by the entire Dalbo complex. So we're interested in S plus, which is the ones of positive chirality, so that's the even part. But there's two copies of that. The reason there's two copies, if you remember, is that in 6 dimensions, to have 1, 0 supersymmetry, we must have 8 supercharges. So So two copies of the irreducible spin representation. So this guy is 4, so we need another one. And it's to do with the fact that the natural pairing on this, the exterior square of this guy, is a vector representation. Okay. So how does the supersymmetry act? Oh yeah, one more thing. By muddling around with the Kähler metric, we can, you know, there's all a bunch of isomorphisms between various spaces of PQ forms. We can also write this guy as omega 3,0, because these are the same, because they're trivial on a Calabi-Yau manifold, plus omega 1,0. And these are also canonically the same on a Calabi-Yau manifold. So if you calculate how does supersymmetry act, I'll write these spinners down here below. The action of supersymmetry will take this guy to there, this guy to there, just by the identity. And the 1,0 part of the connection will be cancelled with the one these spinners here. So just like in the four-dimensional case, a bunch of the fields will cancel in pairs. So what we're left with is a 0,1 part of the connection, the 2,0 part of this auxiliary field, and an additional spinner, fermionic field. And these will be arranged into this action. Okay, so I think I'll probably promise that this is the last one of these calculations we'll do, because I mean, I don't think the proofs are as instructive as the answers are. I think just knowing the answers is very useful, but going through the proofs might not always the most useful way. So in the end, so it's the remaining fields that don't cancel. Are this V2,0, omega 2,0. A fermion, which is living in omega 3,0, and the 0,1 component of the connection. But we can think of omega 2,0 as the same thing as omega 3,1 by wedging with the Kähler form. That the wedging with the Kähler form is an isomorphism between those spaces. So then if you calculate what the action is, the action is the integral of B wedge F02 of A. Just like we said, it should be a BF theory. But we still have this remaining fermion. We also said that I've erased the definition of the BF theory. But if we're treating B as a 3,1 form, there's some gauge symmetry where I can do a gauge transformation. I can add d-bar of something to it. That will be a gauge symmetry. This fermion will be the ghost for that gauge symmetry. The result is ghost gauge symmetry. So the gauge symmetry looks like B goes to B plus D bar sub A psi. And the reason you can conclude that this is the ghost for this gauge symmetry is that when I said that the supersymmetry acts in this way, I neglected to mention there's one more term which has a derivative which goes like this. This involves D bar A. as so this transformation. This is a supersymmetry transformation using the supercharge we've chosen. Okay, any questions about this calculation? Okay, so now we understand what twists look like in four dimensions, what they look like in six dimensions. This is holomorphic BF theory. That will allow us to figure out what twists look like for n equals two theories as well, because how would I get an n equals two theory? I would take this six-dimensional theory and reduce it. And since the process of reduction will commute with the formation of the twist, we can immediately calculate what some of the twists of n equals two theories look like. And it will also allow us to figure out what n equals one theories with matter look like. So we take four-dimensional pure n equals two gauge theory. It's a reduction of six-dimensional 1,0 theory. So if we reduce from C3 to C2, what we find is, so here we had a three-component connection, DZ bar 1, DZ bar 2, DZ bar 3. So in A, so the C3 connection, the Z bar 1, Z bar 2 components become a 0, 1 form on C2, whereas the Z bar 3 component becomes a scalar with this other field, B, and the same thing happens. This becomes, a 2-1 form, whereas the Z bar 3 component becomes a scalar. So these two pieces, let's see. So let's call this A. Let's call this scalar, say, phi. Let's call this A tilde, phi tilde. This is 0, 1. So the action becomes is the integral of phi tilde f 0 2 of A plus the integral of phi times d bar sub A, A tilde. So it's very, so this part is what we saw with pure n equals 1 gauge theory. And this, these two pieces are the extra term, which will be adjoint valued matter. So all I've done here is just literally taken the six-dimensional action and just wrote it down, what it looks like. Questions or anything?
Is there a reason you didn't write anything about 1, 1, 0 forwards?
Did I miss something?
Well, I mean it's...
No, because B was a 3-1 form, right? So no, like in six dimensions, after we twist, everything has a 0, 1, only 0, 1. Yeah, because reduction and twisting will commute with each other.
There's like a map on supersymmetries implicit in that plane or something, like on superchargers.
From the six-dimensional superchargers of the four dimensions?
Yeah. In general, if you're just
going to say
it in general.
That's right. I mean, there is more to say about it, because we've just done the simplest kind of reduction where we assumed we're taking them translation invariant in one complex dimension. But in general, I can take a translation invariant in two real directions, which can be mixed, which need not be a holomorphic subspace. And that corresponds to the four-dimensional supercharge kind of. That corresponds to getting different four-dimensional supercharges. So there is
the general thing is a little subtle or something.
Exactly. Okay. So wait. So now we have some understanding of what's the field content of n equals two pure n equals two gauge theory. Well, a slick summary of what this is. Is that n equals two gauge theory on manifolds of SU2 holonomy. Is again holomorphic BF theory but for the Lie algebra G plus G star. So G plus the adjoint representation. The reason being, we see this thing looks really symmetrical, right? F02A plus D bar A of A tilde, that's just the curvature of a connection which lives in G, not just in G, but in G plus G star. Because if A tilde, we'll view it as living in G star. And then this thing will be the B term. In a similar way, we can almost immediately deduce, so given a representation V of G, the holomorphic twist of pure, sorry, of N equals 1 gauge theory would matter living in V. Is holomorphic BF theory for the Lie algebra G plus V. Why is that? Well, I won't go into the argument in details, but it's a standard thing. You know, if you know what n equals 2 gauge theory looks like as an n equals 1 theory, it looks like n equals 1 theory plus an adjoint valued matter of some kind, whatever that adjoint valued matter is, if I just replace the adjoint representation by some other representation, I'll get a different n equals 1 theory. That's all we're doing. So we can write this out very explicitly. The usual fields of BF theory. Plus, let's treat that as something like a 0, 0 since we're the Clavier manifold. We also have something living in the representation. A 0, 1 form living in the representation, and a scalar living in the representation. And the action is integral B wedge F02A wedge with the 2, 0 holomorphic volume form plus the integral of chi wedge D parse A phi. Okay, so we have a scalar and some kind of Lebond multiplier field forcing this to be holomorphic. It's very close. Yeah, if we ignore the gauge part, this is very close to being a four-dimensional version of the beta gamma system. And then there's some gauge, the additional gauge symmetry, chi goes to chi plus d bar a of eta. Let's say V star. Okay. So I'm writing things in terms of zero some star forms because I'm on a manifold of SU2 holonomy, so it has a holomorphic volume form. And this is the holomorphic volume form. It's a nor vanishing T0 form. Okay, so I think that Next time, I think I'd like to introduce a little bit about the BV formalism, because that allows us to write down the field content in a kind of in a slicker way, in a shorter way. But maybe the last thing I wanted to do, just to indicate that what we've done has at least some content, is to calculate a supersymmetric index. And I'm going to do the very simplest case. The calculation we're going to do can be generalized vastly and reproduces all the standard formulas for these things. So let's calculate the n equals 1 supersymmetric index of a free chiral, which means that the Lie algebra is 0 and the vector space is C. So in this case, the fields are our scalar, and this other guy, well, and the action is integral phi e bar chi, and chi is this gauge symmetry. So to compute the supersymmetric index, the supersymmetric index is it's a partition function on S3 cross S1. The way we compute it is, because it's a conformal theory, the Hilbert space on S3 is the same as the space of local operators by the state operator correspondence. To compute the partition function on S3 cross S1, we should just take the trace of something acting on the Hilbert space on S3. What we find is that there's some parameters called fugacities, the supersymmetric index is equal to the partition function on a certain manifold with the topology of S3 cross S1, where it has a richer structure, which we're not going to explore. And it's equal to the trace of an operator where I have two parameters, Q1 and Q2. Q1 acts by rescaling Z1, Q2 by scaling Z2. And I take the trace in the space of local operators. Of the theory. Okay, so how do I compute this? Well, I need to enumerate the local operators and tell you how these local operators are charged under the action of U1 crimes U1, which rotates the two planes. So what are the local operators? There's bosonic ones. I can take derivatives of phi at 0. And this is of charge k comma l. Now, I'm not allowed to take any anti-holomorphic derivatives, because the anti-holomorphic derivatives are BRC exact. Another way to say it is that the equations of motion say that d bar phi is 0, so any anti-holomorphic derivatives will vanish on the equations of motion. Now, you can ask, well, can we cook up some operators from chi? Well, let's think of the equations of motion of chi, say d bar chi is 0. But every closed 0-1 form is also exact, because we're working locally. So there's nothing we can build just from chi. But if we think a little more, we'll see that there's also this ghost field, eta, which is fermionic. So the field chi equals 0 has gauge symmetry given by eta satisfying d bar eta equals 0. So there's operators we build from the ghosts. So there's no operators we can build from chi as d bar chi equals 0 implies chi is gauge trivial, but we can build operators from eta. Now, this might seem a crazy thing to do because it's a ghost, but if you remember in our calculations, this ghost came from a spinner in the original physical theory. So it's not in the original physical theory, these are actually just fermionic operators built from a spinner. The operators we can write down built from eta are just the derivatives. Eta is 0. And think about how this is charged. Since eta is a 2-0 form, the charge is a bit different. The charge is k plus 1, l plus 1. Now, these are the generators. So the whole space of local operators will be some giant symmetric exterior algebra built from these guys. So what we find is that the whole space of local operators so it's a symmetric algebra on C denser an exterior algebra, symmetric algebra on some infinite dimensional space, describing arbitrary numbers of derivatives of phi, an exterior algebra on something similar, okay. So another way to think about it is, so when we take the character, another way to think about it is the symmetric algebra or an exterior algebra of a direct sum is a tensor product of symmetric or exterior algebras. So each symbol I've written down here will contribute a symmetric algebra. Each symbol I've written here will contribute an exterior algebra. So when I take the character, I'm going to get some giant product. So I'll get the product well on the bottom I'm going to put something which will give me the character of a symmetric algebra. So that's 1 minus q1 k q2 vl. That comes from this, because the character of a symmetric algebra is 1 over 1 minus x. And on the top, I'm going to have the same thing, with extra for extra q2 k plus 1. So this is the answer. And if you read a book on supersymmetric indices or a paper, you will find this formula. So what's that? One of those cases which? Oh, thank you. Yes. And we can also introduce we can also consider how things transform under the action, the U1 action, which changes my scalar. Let's call that factor U. That this will be a U at the bottom, a universe at the top. And you see that this is the correct formula. And yeah, you can have lots of fun. People have lots of fun by saying, oh, Heiberg said there's such a duality. We'll do it by writing in the indices and computing both sides and they're the same. So there's lots of fun things you can do in that way. OK, so I'll stop there.
Can you compute that we're doing the integral of the F theory? At least I'm doing the counting of operators.
Yeah, that's a great question, actually, yeah. I've never tried to do that. What you'd have to do, I suppose, is if you think about how to decompose S, think about spherical harmonics, and I've done that in one dimensions on elliptic curve, and you can you think about the Laplacian elliptic curve and its eigenvalues, and you get a formula, and it matches. And you,
so here you would have to multiply the eigenvalues of the Laplacian for all the
sums. That's 1 times S3. Uh-huh. Yeah. Hmm.